On the show today, we're talking to Cecilia Wright, a leading multicultural trainer, communicator, and champion for Indigenous education and inclusion. Cecilia is the founder of Cultural Inclusions. Today, we yarn about the history and culture of Torres Strait Islands, and Cecilia shares a Torres Strait Islander story and teaches me how to sing Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes in Torres Strait Islander Creole.
Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.
Good morning and welcome to Celia Wright, a cultural educator, early childhood teacher, who's joining us from Wabien or Torres Strait. So the Wi-Fi might be a little bit dropping out, but we're going to push on and see how we go. Welcome, Celia.
Hey, Minna Big Essor for having me, everyone. A very big thank you for this opportunity.
Celia, can you tell us a little bit about who your people are and how you came to be working in the position you are now?
My name's Cecilia Wright. My family name is actually Siki, up on Thursday Island, Wyburn in the Torres Straits. I just want to say a very Minna Big Essor. So a very big thank you for the opportunity to be here today. You know, thank you for the spirits that guide us and all of our ancestors that have come before us as well and the traditional owners. So my family is actually a Chinese Torres Strait family. I'm actually a part of living family and growing up on Karrag Nation people country, which is the main cluster of islands in the Torres Strait. So Karrag Nation are the traditional owners for TI, Horn Island, Hammond Island and Prince of Wales. And I'm using the English names for those islands as well in the Torres Strait. So my family's been here on TI itself, Wyburn, for a very, very long time. They actually came over a long time ago looking for gold on TI and they didn't find any. And I say they found, you know, Thursday Island and, you know, the beautiful islands of the Torres Straits instead. So they stayed. And like most Chinese mob up this way, you know, they started farms on the island. They started trading and selling goods and shops and all that kind of stuff on TI. So my family is actually well known, you know, from that side, that perspective. And I guess my background is early childhood. So yeah, I call myself an early childhood educator. I have been in the sector for over 20 years now and working all across Australia as well as home in Thursday Island as well.
What a rich and diverse background you and your family have had. So we'll dig into that because this is very exciting for me interviewing a Torres Strait Islander, where my mob are from. I'm just going to give a little background for some of our listeners. So we're talking about the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues estimated that there were more than 370 million Indigenous people spread across 70 countries worldwide. They had unique traditions, retained social and cultural and economic characteristics that were distinct from the colonizing societies in which they lived. Indigenous people are the holders of unique languages, knowledge systems, and belief, and possess invaluable traditional knowledge for sustainability of our natural resources. And they have a special relationship to the land and the sea, and they use it very wisely in a cultural way. In Australia, we have two distinct cultural groups, being Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. But there's often a lot of big diversity within these two broad groups, with about 250 to 270 sort of different languages across Australia. So a lot of people don't really know much about the Torres Strait Islander people and culture, Celia. So can you give us a snapshot?
So where is TI? I was thinking, I didn't really go into that. So where is Thursday Island? So the Torres Straits are a group of islands off the very tip of Australia between Cape York and Papua New Guinea. All those beautiful islands in there are the Torres Strait Islands. And there's over 245 islands in the Torres Straits. About 15 are inhabited. And when you look at our Torres Strait Islander flag, a quick yarn about the flag itself.
Yeah.
The green on the bottom represents mainland Australia. The green on the top represents Papua New Guinea. And in that blue in the middle of the flag with our star and our dhari, our headdress, represents the Torres Strait Islands and the Torres Strait Island people. So when you look at the flag, you can see where we're situated. The flag was actually designed to showcase that for everybody. My big things about the Torres Straits is that, you know, we're really navigation people, you know, we live off the sea, we use the stars for navigating, we eat what's around us, and very sustainable living in the Torres Straits where possible, especially our beautiful outer islands. And I guess some of the language I'm using today too, I should probably flag it, is Torres Strait Island Creole. So I'm using the common language that all of the different dialects understand and use every day.
Perfect. We'll get you to maybe give us a few Creole lessons, maybe on body parts for our doctors who might be interested in that sort of stuff. Celia, I was just for our audience, in 2016, the census there was just under 800,000 people in the census who identified as being either Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. So that equated to 3.3% of the total population. Of that, 91% identified as being Aboriginal. And 5%, say 38,000 people identified as being Torres Strait Islander, and 4% of the population identified as being both Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. So what does it mean to be a Torres Strait Islander?
Working in the early childhood sector, education sector, really for me, that's been around who are your family, where are they from, how do you really embed that into your everyday life. For me, we always say in the islands that, you know, family comes first. If anything happens to my family, you know, I'm there. It doesn't matter where I live all around Australia, that I want to be there to support my family, and my family is, you know, first and foremost before anything. So when I yarn to educators and to teachers around that, you know, I say you've got to remember that sometimes work is secondary, because you want to be able to support your family. And remember, we have large families in the Torres Straits too. So it's about making sure everyone in your circle are okay. It takes a village to raise a child, because, you know, for me, it took a village for me to be who I am today. You know, all the elders and all the different people that I've come across my path and in my family that have helped me be who I am. And it's the same for us. If we are working with families, we are educating children, that we're a part of that child's village. So we really have to look holistically when we are working, when we are supporting children and families. You know, we have to look holistically at what else is going on from a larger perspective to make sure everyone is safe and secure.
My heart just feels really full when I hear you talking about family. And my father, Torres Strait Islander man, he and his family left Thursday Island and went down to Cairns. When I went up to visit TI for work one time, my dad was like, make sure you take some fruit from the Wongi tree.
That's right. The Torres Strait Wongi tree, we say you always want to return. Absolutely, absolutely. And that story is actually from the Torres Strait pigeon. So the Torres Strait Island pigeon, the gay now in the Torres Straits, is actually all about the pigeon that lives and we all recognize in the islands, and it actually eats the Wongi fruit. The pigeon is only seen in the islands. Sometimes it comes down to Cairns, but when you see the pigeon, you know, no one really hunts it or eats it because it represents the Torres Straits. And so that's why the Wongi fruit itself represents the Torres Straits too. So if you eat the Wongi fruit, you will always want to return back to TI and the islands.
It must be very difficult, I think, when you have such a close connection to those ancestral lands and the sea, and then you come back and you know, go to the mainland Australia and you're living down there. So for my family, we lived down at a place called Wynnum in Brisbane, which was near the sea. My dad had to always be near the ocean and to be able to go down and see it.
Absolutely. It is tricky. And, you know, that's when I talk to people who are working with Torres Strait Islander youth or children in foster care and families, that they do always feel that need for connection to the ocean, to sea creatures. And that's about recognition in the workplace as well, you know, and having those inviting places to walk into where people feel connected to their culture and to what they identify with.
Thank you for sharing that, and because I really want to get into the work you're doing around the reconciliation action plans that you help people develop. But first of all, I just want to take a little bit of a step back in time, bit of a review of the history of colonialism of the Torres Strait. And I found this on the Torres Strait Islander Regional Council website, if anyone wants to have a little read of it. The first inhabitants migrated to the Torres Strait from the Indonesia archipelago 70,000 years ago. And the first navigator who came through the Torres Straits was a Spaniard called Luis de Torres, and he came through the Straits in 1606. And then we had James Cook, the great colonizer, who claimed the eastern part of Australia in 1770 at Possession Island. So he sort of said, anything above here is for the crown. In 1860, we had a pearling boom that I might get you to talk a little bit about, Celia, if you have any knowledge around that. So basically, we had 700 employees, then they had 100 pearl luggers. So that's how the love story of how my grandparents met, is that my grandfather came across and was working on a pearl lugger. And I'm sure that there's lots of romances that started that way. And then in 1871, we had the London Missionary Society came over with Reverend Samuel McFarlane, and he came to the islands and brought Christianity, which is then now being replicated in our ceremony called the Coming of the Light. So the Torres Strait Islands, after being taken on or annexed by Queensland and Australia in 1879 and 1901, saw only 3 years later that the Torres Strait Islanders became subject to the Aboriginal Protection and Restriction of the Sale of Opium Act, which basically decreed government control over every aspect of their life, whether it's marriage, employment, so you could basically be used as a slave for employment. They could tell you who you could marry. And you can see a lot of that sort of history continuing on in mainland Australia as well. So, Celia, do you want to just share a little bit about the pearling industry on the Torres Strait? Like, I went to lovely Friday Island.
Yes, Friday Island is next to Thursday Island, just to point that out for everybody. And yeah, the beautiful Japanese pearl farm was established a long, long time ago. And when you come up to TI, you can do a day trip over there where they take you to their sustainable pearl farm, totally sustainable. And you actually get to hear the history about how that group in particular came over and did pearling and actually stayed, and they still farm pearls in the Torres Straits today. There is a long history to that. And, you know, a lot of people should definitely have a big look into that, because now we have a really great connection with the Japanese city that is our sister city over in Japan. And Thursday Island itself, yeah, was the hub for all of that, because we had the deepest, the deepest canals, basically, where people could dive, the boats could come into Thursday Island. So that's why we're in particular the hub for the Torres Strait region, because that's where the shipping could come into the islands. And yeah, I had several uncles who did pearl diving. They used to yarn about, you know, the Torres Strait Islanders could dive the deepest, you know, without any equipment to get all of those pearls. And they used to be giant. Yeah, crayfish, beach demur as well. That's right. And pearls back in the day. And call out at Kubin, Moa Island. He's a traditional owner, a Kararag Nation family. And he used to yarn about being traveling all over the Torres Straits and all the way down to Darwin with different crew members, and, you know, and that he could dive the deepest out of everyone. And he loved it. And it was really his step towards independence as well. You know, he was earning his own money, and he could keep that money and use it to build his own house out at Kubin. We're lucky Thursday Island have really had a great turnaround from the war, and they've really done well with the, you know, pearling museum and displays in the cemetery, huge museum on Horn Island as well, talking about, you know, wartime as well, which we haven't yarned about, coming to the Torres Straits. That all leads into the Coming of the Light, that when the missionaries actually came to Darnley, to Erab, that they actually were welcome. Their rituals, their belief system aligned with many of the Torres Strait Islander beliefs as well. So that's why the Coming of the Light is more accepted in the islands, and the missionaries coming to the Torres Straits compared to anywhere else in Australia. And the 1st of July, the Coming of the Light celebration, is seen as a really huge, huge celebration in the Torres Straits, where every island creates a reenactment of when they came, the missionaries came to the islands. And it's actually a celebrated holiday in the Torres Straits as well. People actually take the time to celebrate, acknowledge, and pay their respects to that individual event that happened in the Torres Straits. Yeah, which I love. You know, that really showcases, you know, multiculturalism in the Torres Strait as well. And again, that Torres Strait nature, you know, that everyone is welcome, everyone is accepted, and come along and let's have a celebration together, you know, which still continues today.
Yes, we'd often have a big celebration. And I remember, you know, up at my grandmother's house up in Cairns, we'd have a big mob come over and the ukuleles would come out and have big feed, lots of food on. So yes, we love to have a gathering to celebrate those special days. So Celia, how did you find your journey into education? What tapped you on the shoulder and said, this is your destiny?
That's a good one too. I guess for me, you know, there's a group of us that went to the TI Kindy with Aniwasi Tardantia, who's still alive today as our kindy teacher. And we always say that she was the one that sparked all of us, you know, to be teachers, to follow through in educating children and families after our time at kindy, you know, little four-year-olds. Aniwasi, I always yarn my little story about, you know, one day I didn't want to go to kindy, so I ran home from kindy, you know, literally just down the road past your family's, you know, house down this way, past the Nakatas. And Aniwasi jumped the fence barefoot and ran after me all the way home to catch me and take me back to kindy. And, you know, I guess from a very early age, you know, I really wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to give back to children and to families and to my community. So I was actually sent to boarding school. Myself and my four brothers, we all went to boarding school in Cairns. And you know, and from that experience too, we really learned more of a worldview, because we were at boarding school with people from all over the world, Philippines, New Guinea, you know, all over the place. And we really accepted that opportunity to be away from home, but also having the opportunity, you know, have the education to experience things that we wouldn't have experienced if we were still in the islands. Throughout that, I really discovered my passion for, you know, education and giving back, and also being really respectful in the way that I taught, and really inclusive in my values and in the way I worked as well. And that really sparked for me then that the Torres Straits, Thursday Island in particular, is so multicultural and so diverse and inclusive all in one, that's how I wanted to live and work. That's what I wanted to bring to every job I had all over Australia. The older you get, the more you realize how valuable that is and how not everyone, you know, sees and believes that type of attitude. So it's really worth being passionate about it and sharing it where I can. And so, yeah, I actually came back to Thursday Island after boarding school. I worked at home at a little Catholic school for a year, and that's where I was accepted to university. So I went to uni to study my bachelor in Cairns. And the more I started to study, the more I started to realize that it wasn't inclusive, that the university qualification wasn't supportive of me. Yeah, in those early days. So I actually dropped out of university and came home to work back in community again and in the school system, which I was really happy about. Again, that acceptance, the connection to the sea, connection to my family. I came back home again for a while and worked in community.
You had the wongi fruit.
Yeah, the wongi fruit. That's right. That's right. I wanted to come back home again, you know, seeing the impact, seeing the difference I could make. You know, I decided to go back to university again and give it another go. And, you know, and that's where, you know, I decided I wanted to do more. I wanted to travel. And since then, actually, since university, I've been traveling all over Australia. My partner's in the Defence Force. So we traveled all over Australia, down to Canberra, down to Melbourne, trying to figure out what I was doing in this, you know, frost and hail all the way down the other side of Australia compared to TI.
Freezing
cold, and, you know, and scraping the ice off my windscreen, you know, in the mornings. That again, you know, brought home all of those learnings that I'd had around inclusion, around how to be holistic in my practice, and, you know, and that we needed to do more for Torres Strait Island children, Torres Strait Island families, and to teach other teachers as well about, you know, there's another way to be inclusive, and you know, that real cultural competence conversation around supporting our children and families.
Absolutely. And I really love hearing that story so far. And it made me start thinking a lot around the social determinants of health that we like to talk about in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health. And part of that is that you have to include factors for health to exist, or whole health, holistic health. We have to include factors such as like understanding the cultural identity, supporting the family in a cultural way, for Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people to participate in cultural activities like the coming of the light or NAIDOC ceremonies, and then to have access to the traditional lands. And similarly, with education, we have to be encouraging our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to achieve a higher grade of education. Because in the health realm, we can see that it can lead to higher incomes and to, you know, which will then turn into things like better housing conditions and stuff like that. So I appreciate the work that you're doing here because you're starting at the ground level. When I was thinking about this interview, I was thinking about the different sort of the two things that you're doing. So you have a little Torres Strait Islander young child who might be in Canberra, because we know that not all Torres Strait Islanders live on the Torres Strait. They spread out across Australia. To have someone like you there teaching about their culture or telling a story or being inclusive would make them feel like they'd want to go to school. Letting them their culture be accepted by their peers at a young age would actually help remove those barriers of racism with the things that we see that are barriers to education. As you said, you know, like they mightn't have an auntie to go and drag them back if they go running home. They've got someone like you who makes it feel welcoming and inclusive. So that's such an important thing you're doing for our little Torres Strait Islander people. But then also getting other teachers to feel confident in talking about that. And I know in the medical education field that that's actually quite difficult. You know, medical educators won't talk about Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander information because they feel like they don't have the right to do it. They don't want to do the wrong thing. We come from an aspect as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultural educators and medical educators. We talk about it in terms of if doctors don't know something, like if they don't know how to do an ECG, or they don't know how to teach an ECG, then you'd go and research it, or you might do a course, or you might try to get in further information so you feel confident. You're not standing as an expert in it, but you can actually help direct people, you know, along a learning pathway. And this is where I think the work for you comes in, Celia. Did you find that when you started talking about, say, Torres Strait Islander cultures in the classroom, that you were met with racism? Why are you teaching that? And I imagine as a young lass, when you started in your bachelor degree, you probably came up against a bit of that. And the second part of that question is, how do you teach teachers to feel confident in talking about our culture?
Absolutely. University in particular, I found just, you know, wasn't lenient at all in giving us as, you know, the Torres Strait Islander students or Aboriginal students that type of flexibility and support as well, the wraparound support. You know, we yarn a little bit about that too, that, you know, when you're supporting a child and a family or anyone in your workplace around their culture, that there is a little bit of flexibility there that's needed, you know, especially if family is, you know, forefront of their mind all the time, that there is these opportunities there that where we need to, you know, let people take their time or emergency appointments or, you know, some sorry business is going on for them. That's the type of stuff that was really missing when I started university. And the same when I went into the workplace as well, you know, especially working all over Australia, it was really hard for people to understand that because they had never heard that before. They had never learned that before. That even, you know, embedding Aboriginal culture into our workplaces was very, very new to them. And you do hit a lot of those, you know, old school attitudes too, that, you know, I've been doing this for donkey's years, I know better. When I first started out, I remember a child going home to their family to talk about Thursday Island and the family coming back saying, there is no such island. There is no such place called that. Yeah. Wow. And hitting all of that. And that's probably what sparked me the most to do more, to start my business, Cultural Inclusions. And you know, and I came back to community. I actually come back once a year to visit my family. And I came back and started consulting with elders, consulting with community members. What else can I teach children? This message needs to get out there. Yeah, and that really inspired me more than anything. I remember that conversation in Toowoomba, God knows how long ago now, you know, and really decided to do something about it, you know, and that's a pretty hard decision sometimes when you're faced with, you know, community aspects as well and community politics, we say island politics. Yeah, the more that I started to do the work, the more I started to realize educators were really getting something out of it. They were walking away feeling inspired, feeling connected to the Torres Straits as well, and feeling that little bit more confident to have the conversations. So talking to families, talking to other educators, and sharing our messages, you know, sharing the message that family is so important to these beautiful Torres Strait Islander people. We've got to remember that too. Just that one message alone can mean a lot, hey? So I've had lots of experiences with working in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander medical centres all over Australia, and when I come back to Thursday Island in particular. And, you know, for me, when I walk into a medical centre, I think about, you know, who is coming in with me, or who is there for the client, you know, who is coming in with the client, because sometimes there are so many factors there we really need to consider, you know, that people feel really ashamed to talk about what's going on as well. So it's great to take an extra person in, and it's the same for our childcare centres. It's the same for when young children come in, you know, that you have someone else there to support you. And that's about family. Again, it comes back to that, you know, pamle, we say in Creole, about who is there for that family and who's coming in as an extra person to support them.
And I suppose for teachers, they mightn't really understand if they've got an interview, say, with the parents, that somebody else or another relative might come in that place. And it's the same as what we see in the medical realm as well, as you were rightly saying, that, you know, sort of different people might step in or come along and accompany just to provide that cultural support, which is really important. So you've got a website called Cultural Inclusions. And so just any members from the public can come and buy or purchase any Torres Strait Islander products. My team and I have been stalking your website, and we've noticed that you've got some brand new little Torres Strait Islander cards. Can you tell me a little bit about what they're about and how they're used? They could be used in a family situation and also in early childhood.
Cultural Inclusions is about resources from the Torres Straits, where possible, from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander providers, where I've actually sourced locally different musical instruments, different books, recipe books, cookbooks, island mats, all sorts of stuff from the Torres Straits that anyone can purchase to show that they are wanting to learn about our people and culture, and wanting to show that they're inclusive in their workplaces, in their settings, education and childcare. And recently we've developed the very first Torres Strait Islander alphabet cards. And these cards, every single letter of the alphabet relates back to a Torres Strait Islander item that is significant to our families and to our children and people. So, you know, A is for anchor. You know, and it has a little spiel underneath saying what we use anchors for. B is for basket, and, you know, how we use coconut baskets in the Torres Strait. Every single educator, teacher that has bought them, I've even sold them to Child Safety down in South Australia. You know, every single person that's bought them so far have just loved using them. They've been used as snappers, memory card games. I've actually been using them in the aged care home on Thursday Island with the dementia patients since I've been here. And that's been, you know, the biggest life changer for me. I thought I'd go in and take some beautiful photos with the elders in my cards, but we just sat there crying because it was such an amazing opportunity to give back to those elders, for them to recognize their own culture and people in these alphabet cards. How incredible is that?
That's stunning. So they're available for sale on your site, because that sounds beautiful. And I love that you've been doing the work with the elders up on in the nursing home. I think it was on your Facebook page, I saw a while ago that you're during winter particularly, I think you're doing a call out for blankets or any goods to give to the elders. Is that right?
Yeah, the little aged care home's very tiny up here. So, you know, to help people connect during COVID, I actually got the early childhood centres to do artwork and to send up blankets and little gifts to their elders to help them feel connected, because they were in lockdown. They didn't have access to their big, beautiful families. It's just been really magical. I think, you know, that's the other side of all of this, isn't it? About giving back, about looking after our community.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Celia, you talked about not only the Torres Strait Islander beautiful cards that you've got, but also you had some storybooks. For me, storytelling is such an important part of our culture. Have you got like a little story you can share with us? Maybe one of the books that you've got for sale?
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks very much for that. I do have a very special little story, and there is a book that goes along with it. And it's the story of Alcum, a Saibai Island woman. And you know how we say to people, there's the man in the moon, and people all around the world have a story for the moon and the significance. Well, in the Saibai Islands, we say there's a woman in the moon. It talks about Alcum. And every night, Alcum, one of the women in the village, would come out at nighttime and she would weave her island mat. She would break the coconut leaves, she would clean them and get them all ready. And every night she would sit down under the light of the moon and weave her island mat over and under and over and under. And when the moon would go down and the sun would come up, Alcum would go to bed, and the other women in the village would wake up, and they would come out and weave their island mats during the day. But Alcum would sleep, and at nighttime when the moon came up again, Alcum would come back out and weave her beautiful coconut mat over and under and over and under. And one night the moon stopped and noticed Alcum. And he started to watch her every single night coming out to make her mat. And one night he came down to the village in Saibai and spoke to Alcum. And he said, "You must love me very, very much because you're coming out every night to make your mat. So I want you to come up to the moon and marry me and live in the moon with me." And so that's why we say Alcum is in the moon. And that story is a part of one of my weaving workshops for people to attend to learn about the Torres Strait culture and weaving. And a part of that, I have the storybook, and I also actually get island mats from all over the Torres Straits, and I actually sell the island mats and send them down to people all over Australia as well, so they can actually share our culture in their workplaces.
It's amazing to be able to sit on a mat and then to tell that story about the connection again to the night sky and the ancestral bodies, and how important the moon is to the ocean as well, for the tides. So that's a beautiful story. It's so sweet. Now, Celia, I also promised at the start of this interview that you could maybe share a little bit of, give us a little language lesson for our listeners.
Okay, so there's some key words here that I wanted to teach you that people will know, you are actually trying to learn our culture and share our culture. And I say to everyone, you can use these words anywhere at any time. So this is Torres Strait Island Creole that I'm going to teach you today. Yumipla talk, we call it. And the words are, we say eso, E-S-O.
Eso.
Eso, and that means thank you. So you have to practice saying it. Eso, that's right. And I like to teach this word in particular because it comes back to Torres Strait Islanders being, very grateful and very thankful for everything that we have. The other key word I teach everyone is yawo, Y-A-W-O, which is goodbye. So that's another really key word that we use with everybody every day as well. The word for head is cook.
Cook.
K-U-K. And I actually have a little body parts poster, actually, speaking of that, that is in language as well that we use, with children. So, it might be a really good opportunity for people to have that and to be, showing children when they come in that they identify with different body parts and different language as well. It's really a great one to use.
That's a great idea.
It's really inclusive, and that's what we all want.
Do you have like head and shoulders, head, shoulders, knees and toes?
Yeah. So we sing a little song with the children. So the head is cook, the shoulders is thaibai, and the knees is kulu, and the foot is dimura.
Can you sing that for me?
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Just one.
All right.
Okay. I'll do the actions.
How I teach the children in language is I say the language words and then we say we all clap hands together. Okay, everyone?
Yep.
So here we go. Cook. Thai by kulu dimura, kulu dimura, kulu dimura. Cook. Bye bye, Kulu Dimura. We all clap hands together.
That's excellent. Thank you so much.
I can't believe you got me to sing as well.
I know. Wow. How cheeky. But it was so good. It was excellent. So, Celia, thank you so much for today. I just want to finish off with a question about in a perfect world. So, this is Celia's perfect world. What would your vision be for not only cultural education, but also for the Torres Strait Islander people?
Oh, that's a great question. I think for me, I look at how inclusive can we be. We should be using all over Australia, using our common languages. We should be using Torres Strait and Creole. We should be having inclusive training and workplaces that, you know, have this flexibility to support our Torres Strait Islander children, families, and people in the workplace. That we should be holistic in our learning, in our ways of working, in our policies and procedures, you know, that we really should be having a holistic view for all that we work with, you know, and starting with Australia's First Nations people. That's where it sits with me. That's what it's about.
So where can we find you? You're on Facebook under Cultural Inclusions. Where else can we find you?
Thanks. So I am on Instagram. I am on YouTube. And I'd love everyone to jump on the YouTube account and subscribe, because there's some great videos there. I do my little weaving. I read some of my children's storybooks. And there's also videos from all over the Torres Straits where I've saved them some beautiful celebrations and singing and dancing and special clips that everyone from around the world can tune in and connect to and hear what we've been yarning about and see what we've been yarning about.
So big SO, Celia. And thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a lovely opportunity.
Mina Bigesso for the opportunity to be here and to yarn and share. And, you know, I'm really happy to connect with anyone who wants to have more of a conversation around the education or support or working with children, families. You know, that's what it's all about at the end of the day for me. So happy to connect with anyone who wants to. Thank you.
That's excellent. So if anyone's got any questions, they can send you a message or drop you an email and see if you are able to help people talk about or feel confident about talking about the Torres Strait Islander culture in a more inclusive way. So thanks, Celia. Love your work. Yo.
Yo. It's all for that.
Thanks for listening to Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Please subscribe to the podcast and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative, supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.